Back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. In 2009, the Varnum decision made Iowa the third state to allow same-sex couples to marry. It's been 5 years as of tomorrow. Now 17 states sanction same-sex marriage. Several others allow civil unions. Tomorrow on this program, we'll look at how public and political attitudes on same-sex marriage have shifted. The anniversary of the Varnum ruling. We hope you'll join us tomorrow with your calls and emails and social media as well. And at the end of this program, I want to reach out to our political analysts this hour to get a reflection or two on that anniversary coming tomorrow. But first, let's make sure you know we have Tim Hagel in the studio now, associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa, Stefan Schmidt, university professor of political science at Iowa State University, tackling politics, giving us analysis of recent developments as we like to do on Wednesday. We'd like you to join our conversation. 1-866-780-9100, especially as we talk about the new Obamacare numbers this half hour. What do you think the better than expected enrollment numbers mean for the Affordable Care Act? What do you think their implications are for coming elections? 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Check out our Facebook page and leave a message or a question or tweet us at IPR Talk. Last-minute enrollment, a surge, enabled the White House to meet its original sign-up target for the Affordable Care Act. Now, that's a surprising victory for the Obama administration after that absolutely disastrous rollout of the online website. It's become a political hot potato for Democrats, also a rallying cry for Republicans. Yesterday afternoon, President Obama said that 7.1 million people had signed up on federal or state exchanges for coverage under the health care law, now often known as Obamacare.
Last night, the first open enrollment period under this law came to an end. And despite several lost weeks out of the gate because of problems with the website, 7.1 million Americans have now signed up for private insurance plans through these marketplaces. 7.1. Yeah. The truth is, even more folks want to sign up. So anybody who was stuck in line because of the huge surge of demand over the past few days can still go back and finish your enrollment. 7.1 million. That's on top of the more than 3 million young adults who've gained insurance under this law by staying on their family's plan. That's on top of the millions more who've gained access through Medicaid expansion and the Children's Health Insurance Program.
The president yesterday afternoon in the Rose Garden. Last week on the other side of the political fence, just to hear some words there, last week on CNBC's Kudlow Report, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell called Obamacare a disaster.
It's a disaster all across the country. Premiums are going up. Jobs are being lost. The health care providers are confronted with chaos. All the hospital and hospice and nursing home cuts. No amount of effort, I think, is going to put any lipstick on this pig.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. River to River listeners, what do you think? The better-than-expected enrollment numbers mean for the Affordable Care Act? Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Tim Hagel, let me put this to you. Since last October, the GOP has been riding a wave of negative stories about the law, the troubled website, of course, the low and early enrollment numbers, the delays in implementing the law, stories about Americans negatively impacted. Does the GOP messaging change now?
I don't know that it changes necessarily, that for quite a while they have been saying that the numbers that the administration had been reporting all along and ultimately the 7.1 million were a little questionable, shall we say, in that it doesn't necessarily – when you sign up, you don't necessarily get yourself enrolled if you want to make the distinction between the two. And the point that they make is that you actually have to pay and get your first check in before you're actually covered. They also make the point that a large number of those people that signed up were people who had lost their old plan and were seeking coverage again. So the point being that part of the goal of the Affordable Care Act was to insure the people that were currently uninsured. The figure varied a little bit, but around 37 million people. And some figures suggest that maybe as few as less than a million of those actually were people that had signed up. So Republicans will push back on some of the numbers. But one of the changes that at least some people have noticed is that where some Republicans, and some Republicans are still saying that they want to repeal Obamacare, but other people are saying replace rather than repeal. And I think that that was probably going to have to be the practical aspect anyway, because there are certain parts of Obamacare that people like. And the president mentioned one in terms of young people staying on their parents' policies. Another is the prohibition against pre-existing conditions and the concern over lifetime limits. And so those three things are things that I think even Republicans would be very reluctant to get rid of, but they want to perhaps put it in a different framework.
A new Washington Post ABC poll showing that support for the law, the health care law, seems to be growing. 49% supporting the law, 48% opposing it. Stephen, your view?
Well, my view is that if you look at Congressman Ryan's proposal to balance the budget, you see the real sort of roadmap that Republicans are laying out. And it's pretty, let's call it draconian and daunting. I mean, the cuts to Medicaid are gigantic and would throw a lot of elderly, low-income people out of care facilities where they now are. So you ought to read that proposal. He doesn't touch Social Security because he knows that older Americans vote a lot, but he proposes a lot of cuts to food stamps and other things. And so the health care issue is wrapped in a larger package of who the Democrats basically stand for and where the Republicans want to balance the federal budget and reduce the deficit.
Mm-hmm.
And those lines are pretty clear. And Obamacare is in the way of all of this. And yep. Obamacare is on the chopping block of every single Republican that I know. And Americans are going to, you know, pay attention to that in spite of all the glitches with it and all the uncertainties and so on. I think Obamacare probably is not rolling out as smoothly as President Obama wants us to believe with the numbers that he reported. And it is true that as more people, whether it's through Medicaid, which is one of the big programs that has been essentially enhanced as a result of people going to the healthcare.gov website, looking for insurance, putting in their meager income or savings, and therefore qualifying for not just subsidies, but actually for Medicaid. That's going to cost the federal government a huge amount of money,
okay,
even though it's the right thing to do to put people in some sort of healthcare environment.
Stephen Schmidt, Tim Hagel, let's go to the phones and see what our listeners have to say about these enrollment numbers. Scott is in Davenport. Hi, Scott.
How you guys doing today?
We're doing great. What's on your mind?
Hey, I'm just curious. He quoted 7.1 million people, but as typical with this administration, they have no documentation to back that up. It's another example when Obama says something, we should just take him at face value, and we've learned that mm-hmm. you can't do that. He doesn't talk about the fact that of these 7.1 million people, how many had insurance and lost it? And because you have to sign up for Obamacare or face a fine, how many of that theoretical 7.1 million people had insurance?
Okay, Scott, I think that we'll find out whether those numbers come out in the future once those are all deciphered. Thank you, Scott, in Davenport. Is it Barron? Am I getting that right? Barron in Des Moines?
Yep, that's right.
Hi, Barron. What's on your mind?
Hey. Well, I just wanted to let you know, from where I look, I'm a surgeon in Des Moines, and you may like the provisions in Obamacare or not like them, but I think the media is focusing way too much on how many people enroll and how the computer program works as opposed to what the real effects of the program are going to be and, you know, financially if it's viable.
Right.
So I think everything from this fall, from September, from the botched rollout until now, with improved numbers, that really isn't as important to me as what's going to happen to all of our patients in the future.
So right. And Barron, we were having a discussion here in the office about that. We are going to focus more in the future when we talk about Obamacare with public policy experts about the delivery end is what you're talking about. We've been concentrating, and you're right, on the coverage end with this sign-up period. But we do want to get into the nuts and bolts of the delivery and how that will affect health care costs, for instance. But, Barron, thank you in Des Moines for your comment.
You bet.
Reactions to those two calls, Tim?
Well, right. I think that both callers are right, as I had said before, about the numbers. The thing is I think that we can probably believe that 7.1 million people signed up. But given, as the caller indicated, that the administration has been fuzzy on some other things, that there is a certain skepticism there, plus the concern that some people have is saying, well, look, if you can tell us that, yes, you hit 7.1 million, why can't you tell us how many people actually paid? And so the fact that they're willing to reveal some numbers and not others, again, leaves some questions, and we'll eventually get that information. As far as what the surgeon said, absolutely, that at this point we're going to start to see, well, okay, do they have coverage? Are people happy with the deductible that are required, and so we'll start to see perhaps, as in fact even the Obama administration has been tweeting out a series of examples of people who are happy that they got coverage and so forth, and so we'll probably see competing anecdotes back and forth on the issue.
Yeah, that without a doubt, that each party will be hauling out competing anecdotes of people either benefiting or suffering
right.
from the new health care law. Going forward, what do you see, Stefan?
Well, you know, we've just about beaten this horse to death, but the truth of the matter is that a lot of people are signing up for one reason or another, and at the other end of it, we have a huge deficit of doctors. The United States, before Obamacare was rolled out, already had an enormous deficit of physicians. The medical schools, teaching hospitals are not producing nearly enough numbers. So we go raiding doctors all over the world and entice them to come here, creating doctor shortages in other places because we're not producing enough doctors, even before Obamacare. And I've written my members of Congress and told them, when you do something as huge as this, assuming it's big, you also have to, on the supply side, supply the people who, nurses and other facilities who are going to be dealing with this. Otherwise, the healthcare system, if assuming that this is actually a real healthcare surge, is going to be overwhelmed by an avalanche of new customers who have never been there. And it is going to hurt the quality of healthcare and the accessibility for everybody.
We want to get to a couple of other topics this hour, but very quickly, I want each of your takes on what this will look like in 6 months from now. Whose issue is it in the election? Tim Hagel, any different than now?
I don't think it's going to be different than now. Certainly the administration has something now that they can hang their hat on as a success. We'll have to see if that continues. But clearly the GOP is invested in making Obamacare a campaign issue. But as many even GOP strategists have noted, it can't be the only issue and it can't be simply a repeal. That there's got to be a replace. They have to have an alternative.
Stefan Schmidt, will some Democrats be less shy about touting Obamacare?
Probably not. I mean, it depends on where they're running, what state and what district. You know, all politics is local.
Okay. Let's talk about a couple of other things. Yesterday, Senator Rand Paul argued that the Republican Party needs to, quote, get beyond deportation in order to break through to Hispanic voters. The Kentucky Republican, and he's a likely 2016 contender for the race for the White House, argued that before the GOP can make its case to the Latino community, which overwhelmingly voted for Democrats in 2012, we have to remember. The party needs to make clear, he said, it is open to a more welcoming approach to immigration. This is part of a speech at the launch of MRC Latino, the first ever Spanish language media watchdog. Paul said his party needs to find a way to open the door for minorities, including Latinos, to support them.
I think one way to get the door ajar is saying that, you know, Mrs. Garcia's nephew is not going to be sent home to Mexico, you know, because everybody, even those who are here legally, know somebody who is here who doesn't have the proper visa. I think the other thing to acknowledge is that it's not always the individual's fault. Sometimes it's a child who has no control over this, but sometimes it's also somebody who came here and tried to use our system. We as conservatives talk a lot about big government and how big government never seems to work. We're always talking about Obamacare now, how big governments have it. It's a disaster in them trying to take over health care. Well, guess what? Bigger government's not very good with the visa system either. So part of the problem is not on the fault of those who are come to this country trying to use it. Part of the problem is big government. So as conservatives, when we are blasting government for not working, we need to understand that the visa system's part of big government. It's not working very well.
What do you think about Rand Paul's message, Stephen Schmidt? Effective? One that the rest of the GOP can embrace?
Nope. I don't think so.
Why not?
Because, you know, there is not just the GOP, but there are a lot of Americans who are extremely concerned about people coming to this country without documents, without a visa, staying here, and they feel that they're competing with them for jobs. And so that violates a tremendous root connection that the Republicans have with a lot of Americans, not just with Republicans. The other thing is that Hispanics and Latinos are much more concerned about jobs. They're much more concerned about the accessibility of the school system. They're much more concerned about affordable health care and being treated with respect by police and law enforcement in their own communities than they are with the issue of immigration. It's a myth. I'm a founding member of LULAC, the chapter of LULAC in Des Moines, which is one of the oldest. It's the League of United Latin American Citizens. I've been a member since I came here in 1970, so I know a lot of my Latino friends in Iowa. And, you know, immigration is just one issue. And on many of the other issues I think that Rand Paul has, Latinos are not going to particularly vote for Republicans because they completely disagree on those other issues. It's not a Latinos are not a one issue constituency.
Okay, quickly on this, Tim Hagel, your view, does it agree with Stephens?
It, by and large, it does. I think part of what Rand Paul was saying and that wasn't in that clip is he kind of set up the straw man of, well, Republicans want deportation, but few Republicans are actually saying, okay, you have to have deportation. But the problem for Republicans is they don't have a good alternative. That's something that's not amnesty, but on the other hand, isn't deportation. And that middle ground is what they're having a struggle finding.
Okay, let's touch on this. Go zero in on Iowa politics, changing the leadership of the Iowa GOP. Iowa Public Radio's Clay Masters this morning, maybe you heard it, spoke with the new Iowa GOP chair, also former state lawmaker, Danny Carroll. He asked how plans to maintain stability in his party, about his plans to maintain stability in his party and move it forward.
I've thought a lot about that, and even more since Saturday. It occurred to me this morning that, being a part of this position in the Republican Party is kind of like going to a big family reunion. When you get everybody together, there are some things you just don't talk about. But you look for those things that unite. For many Republicans, regardless of what issue or issues are paramount, there's one thing that we know. We're going to do better if Republicans are elected and Republicans are in control. And so as chairman of the party, I look forward to helping Republicans take control of the Iowa Senate and the United States Senate to send more Republicans to elected office, knowing that for all of us, Republicans will be better off if they win elections.
The new Iowa.
And that's what unites us.
The new Iowa GOP chair, Danny Carroll, speaking this morning with Clay Masters. You can hear that entire interview on iowapublicradio.org, or we'll put a link on our Facebook page too. Tim Hagel, traditionally Republicans have done a really good job of coalescing around candidates to win elections, but that hasn't really been the case in the national elections in the last 8 years or so. Do you think Danny Carroll can get the GOP back in Iowa?
Well, that's the open question, that there are certainly some people that are skeptical or unsure if he's going to be able to do it. So he certainly comes in at a tough job. Even if his heart and head are in the right place, he's still got to be able to reach out to the various people that – I'll even say factions to a certain extent within the Iowa Republican Party. And if he can do that, and if he can sort of tamp down the differences and focus more on the similarities, then he may be able to have a successful run.
Got just over a minute left. I want to jump to tomorrow's show, get your views before we end this program. Tomorrow, the fifth anniversary of the Varnum decision that allowed same-sex couples to marry in Iowa. We'll talk about the attitude change among the public and political attitudes tomorrow. But first, I wanted to end this program by having you each share your reflections on this five-year anniversary. Stephen Schmidt, please, we only have about a minute, so 30, 40 seconds for each of you.
Well, I think Republicans and people who are against gay marriage and who have traditional values and are faith-based still don't like the decision. Their minds haven't changed. The younger generation has, and it seems to be a national trend that gay marriage has become acceptable in more and more states. So,
5 years later, 17 states now sanctioning same-sex marriage, several others allowing civil unions, U.S. Supreme Court decision ruling the federal same-sex marriage ban unconstitutional. Your thoughts as we close, Tim Hagel?
My thoughts are pretty much the same as they were a couple of years ago, where that most people, this isn't going to affect them directly, so they may not like it personally, and if they had an opportunity, might vote against it, but they aren't going to fight that hard.
Mm-hmm. Will we see in the near future same-sex marriage in a Republican platform?
I don't know that we'll ever see it in a Republican platform, at least not in a pro way. They may get rid of it in terms of an anti-statement.
Okay. Thank you very much for joining us. Tim Hagel, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa. Stephen Schmidt, University Professor of Political Science at Iowa State University, dissecting our political landscape this week. Gentlemen, it's always a pleasure to have you with us.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And joining me in the studio now, Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow, Charity, we will hitch our wagons together and really address this anniversary. What are you looking at 10 o'clock?
Well, as we mark the anniversary of the Varnum case, at 10 o'clock we're going to talk with people who have been directly affected by the decision. And we'll also talk about cultural changes in Iowa as to how people who are part of the GLBT community have been treated and affected in a number of different ways.
Okay, so that's at 10 o'clock on Talk of Iowa. At noon on River to River, we'll be looking at how a public and political attitudes on same-sex marriage have shifted in the intervening 5 years. Charity, thank you for dropping in.
Thank you, Ben.
River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.